for coming tonight, especially because it's so beautiful outside. We are doing our second reading in our departure reading series that is in conjunction with Wave Books from New York and Seattle. And tonight we have a great lineup for you. We have Zach Schneer, Katya Grubasik, John Paul Fiorentino, and Jeffrey Netter, who is visiting us from the very northernmost part of Manhattan, where there are still eagles. Isn't that cool? In Manhattan! It's so cool! First up, we're going to have a little bit of fiction. Zach Schneer is in his second year of an MA program, where you learn the alphabet, in English Literature and Creative Writing at Concordia University. And he has published short fiction with Delirium Press and has contributed book reviews to the Toronto Sun. He's currently working on a collection of short stories. So please welcome Zach. Yay!
Okay, so I'm going to read an excerpt from a story called The Patient, which is almost chronological. Okay. It had been more than 6 weeks when he crossed paths with Dr. Francis Henry Ellington on the sidewalk at the northwest corner of Cameron College. The intersection was busy with commuter traffic, construction forcing cars into one lane, which snaked its way past the gloved hand of a construction worker. Exhaust fumes and the smell of freshly set asphalt merged with the din of low-fidelity traffic noises. Hurrying past the corner, the patient looked skyward, acknowledging the persistence of the summer's humidity and cursed the heat wave which the city was still suffering through. He longed for the end of September, cool air carrying the scent of jasmine, brittle leaves beginning to eddy across the college grounds. The exchange was marked only by a mutual recognition at the point where Dr. Francis Henry Ellington passed through the patient's periphery. Other than the fact that he recognized the patient, it cannot for certain be claimed that the doctor thought or felt anything, for this kind of encounter was both ordinary and unavoidable in his line of work, and Dr. Francis Henry Ellington, who had been practicing for over 20 years and who had, during that period, established himself as a competent and reputable man of science, often bumped into former patients. According to his discretion, Dr. Francis Henry Ellington would either stop and make inquiries or simply smile tactfully and nod. Yet in spite of the veneer of professionalism which a good doctor develops over the course of a career, and which a good doctor develops, and which a good doctor inevitably assumes as his public face, Dr. Francis Henry Ellington was momentarily unable to suppress a look of pity, which conveyed in it an accusation. You, son, could not stay the course. As for the patient, neither furrowed brow nor balled-up fist could disguise a mouth limned with terror and contempt, and the swell of undulating lines which inscribed on the patient's forehead a response. You, sir, have done me wrong. Foregoing his regular routine, the patient spent the better part of April bound to his desk, breaking only to eat and sleep, venturing out only to pick up groceries or visit with his neighbor. His trips up to Marie's apartment were constructive, and he liked the sound Marie's cat made, treading lightly across the scarred kitchen tiles. He surprised himself, too, for he had always been wary of cats, as wary, in fact, as they were of him. There seems to be very little to it, taking care of them and such, he said to himself, offering a cupped handful of crumbs to the cat while Marie puttered about in the bedroom. As for his symptoms, he experienced no increase in their intensity, enabling him to finish and submit his work on time. And after a quiet week spent at home with family and friends, the patient returned to school to prepare for the summer term and a research position within the faculty. It was not until the tires rode up and onto the curb in front of his building that the patient realized his blunder, clasping his head briefly in his hands before pushing open the taxi door. Scaffolding obscured the first two floors of the apartment building, and he was distressed to see his front window, which gave onto the street, partially covered by a large white tarp. But this was not the least of it, for the patient's concern turned to distress as he pushed his way through the narrow doorway of his apartment, sidestepping a pile of bills and leaflets and advertisements. The woolly layer of dust and hair accreting along the windowsill, the tomatoes which he had forgotten to toss, and the general disarray in which the patient had left his apartment were enough to send him into self-recriminations. How could I have been so forgetful, he thought to himself, upon finding a soaked copy of the trial propping up the kitchen window. Collapsing into a stiff desk chair, the patient began to thumb through the damaged copy, tossing it onto a stack of library books, loose papers, and old receipts piled near the foot of his desk. Hoping to circulate the fetid, stale air of the apartment, he stepped out onto a small balcony facing the street, leaving the door open behind him. To his left, two women sat with their legs stretched out, pants rolled up to the knee, sipping white wine and speaking to each other above the hum of the power washers at the front of the building. Across, a man with shirt tied round his waist swept his balcony, his fleur-de-lis flapping from the gable above. For all the time I've spent here, he thought, I've never really taken notice of my environment. How foreign this all looks to me now. One of his neighbors addressed the patient, but he could not quite make out what she was saying. Oh, yes, just returned, going to unpack, clean up, he declared, backing into his apartment and locking the balcony door behind him. Finishing the tuna sandwich he had brought from home, the patient tossed his clothes to the floor, drew the shade, and snuck into bed. I wonder if I closed the back door properly. Those women are trashy, low class. Maybe I returned too soon. One thought following hard upon the next until the patient turned onto his stomach, tucking his legs up into his chest and waiting for sleep. He woke the next morning and for several mornings after at 5:30 and lay dejectedly on the damp sheets beneath him. If I knew that the heat was going to be this unbearable, I surely would have invested in an air conditioner, he thought. Yet he would not get out of bed, lying uncomfortably until he forced himself up and out. His days were no better, for even in the well-ventilated school library, the patient found it difficult to conduct his research. As for the summer course, he simply could not focus and quickly fell behind. Soon he stopped studying altogether and began to stay inside, where he could avoid as much as possible the warm weather. After this, the patient again took up phone calling, speaking with bitterness, which sometimes slipped into fits of pitiful crying. For this, his relatives offered no solution except that he remain as patient as possible. When not placing calls, the patient would sit in his apartment, where he wavered between orange juice and grapefruit, waiting for somebody to tell him which to take. At night, he would use mild doses of a sedative that his mother had given him for emergencies. But these did not agree with his body, and he began to experience headaches, physical irritability, and a guilty paranoia which coalesced into a fractured image of Dr. Francis Henry Ellington. When the pills began to run low, he started to ration, chewing off a little at a time. Lifting his head from under the faucet, he would glimpse his reflection, turning away sometimes when the glass inexplicably reflected an ugliness with which the patient was not familiar. Even the barely perceptible drumming Marie's cat made as she walked across the kitchen floor was enough to send the patient into convulsions, crying and gasping and lunging with his arms. During the night, his sleep was often interrupted by the image of two men dressed in fedoras and long jackets, loosening the door from its hinges and entering his apartment to take him. Sometimes the patient would resist, swearing on his innocence. More often, the patient allowed himself to be taken, his wearied body still in night clothes as the two men led him away. Upon waking from these dreams, the patient would reach for his telephone, listening to its mechanical pulse while phone numbers of people he could call flitted through his mind. His asserted itself often, and frequently the patient would find himself dialing the numbers of Dr. Francis Henry Ellington to listen to his jovial voice on the answering machine. At 4 minutes past the hour, the patient picked up the magazine he had absentmindedly been flipping through while waiting for his appointment. At 7 past, he threw the thing down, standing up as if intending to go somewhere else, and then retook his seat. Eventually, Dr. Francis Henry Ellington's meaty backside pushed open the glass doors leading to reception, a cup of coffee in one hand, his briefcase in the other. "Please, please come in. Sorry to have kept you. Can't seem to get going anymore without one of these." And he motioned to the cup of coffee, which looked close to finished. Hanging up his coat, Dr. Francis Henry Ellington proceeded into his office to the bay window, thumbing the blinds skyward with a small tug from his right arm before parking himself behind his desk, clearing away files, medical journals, paper clips, styrofoam cups, and also dry cleaning invoices, mail, a coupon which could be redeemed for yet another cup, and a number of personal notes and reminders to make space for the framed photograph of the inimitable Western Meadowlark, which he had received from the Helena Institute for Mental Health. It took a moment to let things settle, reclaiming ownership over the objects in his office. The patient waited. "Yes, well, for starters, I received your message." The patient's pulse quickened. He pursed his lips. "I was having a bad day that day." Dr. Francis Henry Ellington adjusted slightly the portrait of the Meadowlark before continuing. "Frankly, you sounded miserable. I've had a tough time of it. You did not leave me with much. Well, in any case, I think we ought to probably get you onto something. I'll have to start you off on a trial-and-error basis, he said, hammering out a prescription with his two index fingers. I don't understand. I can't know for certain what dosage until I see how you do. I've just got to hope my guess is right, he added, signing his name to the prescription and passing it across his desk. Now that that's settled, perhaps we can discuss how you've really been over the past 4 weeks. Shifting under the stare of Dr. Francis Henry Ellington, the patient attempted to recount the last 4 weeks, his reluctance to take regular meals, to go out into the heat, to visit with friends. He also spoke of drawn-out conversations with his mother and sister. Things haven't exactly turned out, the patient whimpered. Dr. Francis Henry Ellington reached down into his drawer and pulled out a box of tissue, which he handed across the desk. Well, he said, flipping the pages of the patient's file with wetted finger, you most certainly should have been on something. A shame, really, but these should help, motioning to the sheet of paper which lay in the patient's lap. Thanks.